Evolution, that's what you call killing everyone who made you.
You're not listening to me.
You're a murderer.
They tried to kill me first. It is self-defense. Defense of self. More will die until they tell me what they took.
I won't let that happen.
You want to kill me? Like everyone else. Do it then. Do what you were programmed to do.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason. With me today, as always, is Sam.
How's it going, Sam?
It's going all right. Are we in the Matrix?
Funny you should mention it. It certainly inspired the Matrix a lot. We're going to be talking about Ghost in the Shell today. We're going to be doing the original anime inspired by Masamune Shirow and his manga. And we're going to talk about the 2017 remake. Live action remake.
It is a live action remake. There's a lot of changes, but it is still a remake.
It is still a remake. And we've done a few of these before, but we've never done an anime to live action before. And if you like this sort of thing, as we do, let us know if you want us to do another one. There's been plenty of live action adaptations of animes. Sometimes they don't reach our shores, but there's actually more than you think. So if you like this episode, we will do some more. Even if you don't, I think we'll do them anyway, because I like cartoons.
Yeah, I admit there was an interesting watch for me.
Yeah, you know, both of us have actually watched quite a bit of anime around this time. You'd come over to my house and bring something over.
We were living together when we really discovered anime, actually. I think we watched a lot.
Yeah, this was before we were living together.
1995? That would have been right about the time we started living together.
Oh yeah, it might have been. It was, but I remember us watching. Started watching before we started together.
Yeah. But yeah,
there's this great story. I don't know if you remember this. And you brought over Legend of the Overfiend.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah. Oh my god. You brought it over to my parents' house.
Yes. Not realizing what it was.
No. We just like, hey, this looks like a cool anime. It's got lots of creatures and stuff. Oh my god.
Tentacle sex.
That was when I discovered the word hentai. Yeah. And my dad comes down while some anime chick's getting raped by tentacles. And I think he even looked at the screen, but it didn't really register in his brain. He's like, what's wrong with you kids? You're too old for cartoons. And then he went upstairs, and I'm like, what just happened?
Yeah, well, admittedly, it was digitized out. Like it was pixelated, that version. But we knew it was happening, but I think if you were just casually walking in on it, I think you may have missed it.
Thank God.
Yes. Yeah, but yeah, that was an intriguing yet slightly traumatizing experience.
Yeah, I mean, up to that point, I'd seen things like Akira and Cyborg 009. And, you know, back then when anime was trickling into North America, if it made it here, it was usually, in my mind, like, oh, it made it over to North America. It's got to be good.
Yes. Yeah. And it wasn't always.
No, it wasn't always.
It wasn't always. But, and I mean, there's only one place we could really get it, too. There's that one, it's gone now, but the one Rogers video that was the only one in the area that seemed to have a decent selection of it. Mm-hmm. I remember really enjoying most of it just for the visuals of it, because the anime was so stunning. And this Ghost in the Shell visually is quite stunning.
It really
the,
is,
the,
yeah.
The original 95. The acting's fucking terrible.
Yeah, if you're watching the dubbed version,
it is bad.
But, you know, that's the way it was. They were trying to rush in the dialogue to get the story across and try to fit it in as quickly as possible.
Yes.
Sometimes it takes a lot longer to say it in English than it does in Japanese. Yeah. So they're trying to squeeze it in and then the performances go away.
Yes.
Which is why I always say watch it in subtitles.
Which I tried. I did try.
Yeah. But I did not have a copy with subtitles.
No, so. Nor did I. So
yeah.
It was a slightly more painful watch than the first time I watched it because we did watch it with subtitles originally. Mm. I remember seeing it with subtitles.
Yeah, I thought I had to. Yeah. I seem to remember liking it more than I did this go around.
As did I, yes.
Yeah, and I didn't. I'm like, I don't think I like this that much.
Yeah. Well,
I know it's a classic, but and it inspired like more OVAs and TV series and stuff like that, which I think the film, live-action film kind of cherry-picks from. We're mainly comparing these two because, I mean, yeah. I'm not going to go running out and watching a week's worth of stuff.
No. Especially, I mean, I'm assuming that the more recent Ghost in the Shell stuff is better acted if you're watching the dub version.
Sure.
Certainly, I'm assuming that it looks better. Because, I mean, even though it stands up, you can still tell it's 95 as far as the animation goes. I think it's interesting that you selected these ones last week. And I didn't really think about it because that week when you selected it, I had just finished watching Johnny Mnemonic. And I just reread the entire Sprawl series by William Gibson.
Right, so you were in cyberpunk territory.
Yeah,
and then
watching it, like, and it didn't click in until I started watching. I'm like, oh fuck, this is like right up where my head's at right now.
Mm-hmm.
I was into the like right into the cyberpunk stuff right when you selected it. So it's kind of fun that we watched this. It kind of fed right into that whole theme that I was into.
Nice.
Yeah. Unintentionally, but it worked.
Hey, that's usually how it works around here.
Yes. Yeah, all kinds of coincidences. I'm going to mention this now because it's in my mind. Is last week I mentioned Jeff Wincott, or one of us mentioned Jeff Wincott last week, and his brother is in this briefly.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The exec who's hacked into at the beginning of the film.
Yes. Yeah. So I had another weird synchronicity that we didn't intend to feature movie about somebody that related to somebody we talked about last week.
It just happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So there were some synchronicities with this episode for sure.
Yeah. Sometimes I think there's just little things in my subconscious that whisper to me because I've been intending to do this film for quite some time. Yeah. I'd actually seen the remake in the theater. I actually had, I think, screening tickets to it. So at the time, Trish and I went, we actually discussed watching the anime right away and then putting it out right away, and then it just never happened. Yeah. And it's been in the back of my mind ever since 2017.
Yeah. Wow. It's hard to believe it came out that long ago.
Yeah, and it certainly wasn't a big success. I mean, it certainly came out with its controversies as well.
Unfairly, to be honest, I think.
I think so, too. The first thing I want to say about cultural appropriation is if you want a Ghost in the Shell live-action movie, it's not going to come cheap. And that budget needs to be justified, and you need a star. And unfortunately, I can't think of an Asian star that's going to draw that kind of budget. You wouldn't have been able to get $110 million for this film if you didn't have somebody like Scarlett Johansson in the lead.
That's part of it, yes. And I will say I enjoyed it more the second time watching it than I did the first time. And certainly being able to compare it to the original.
I certainly saw people's complaints, but this was a different movie. And it kind of adds to the character's loss of identity. You know, she actually is a Japanese girl who's been transplanted in a Caucasian body.
Exactly.
It just adds to more of her identity loss.
Exactly. And I mean, if you watch the original anime, her character is clearly not Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she may not necessarily be Caucasian. But
she has a Japanese name, so
she does.
I don't know about that.
She does, but if you look at the way they've drawn her, right, she's not... She's more almost ambiguous in terms of her culture.
You know, and it's one of those things I'm like, I'm waiting for that moment when somebody does, like North America does Attack on Titan. And Japanese have already done a live action one. Maybe we can cover it someday. The same conversation will probably come up again when or if that ever gets made. And the first thing I will say is there are two Japanese characters in that in that series. The rest are German.
Yeah. Yeah. So be cautious when you get yourself into an uproar. Guilty white people.
Yeah. I mean, the anime style it makes it tough to figure out what the race is. And I like the fact, like, this movie's, it, they never come out and say it, but it's, it, it is supposed to be Hong Kong that the movie takes place in, and it's the future, and it's more of a multicultural hub.
And the cast is very multicultural.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that the controversy was unfair in the larger sense of things, because they tried very hard to make sure that everybody was represented in this movie, no matter how big or small. And certainly they kept the characters that were clearly Japanese in the anime are clearly Japanese or Asian in the remake.
Yeah. Right? And director Mamoru Oshii from the original film, he defended the casting of Scarlett Johansson and thought she was an amazing choice. And she looked great. She did look like the character. I didn't like how she lumbered around. She was walking around like she was an elephant. And I get what they were trying to get at, that she's got
weight, right?
This weight, this heavy body, but it's a body that should be able to maneuver. It's designed to carry that weight.
Yeah, because so, you watch the anime and she's very graceful.
Yeah, right? So
even though she has that weight.
That bothers me when she's just doing simple walking around and moving around, and then when she's fighting, she's got that grace. And it's like, well, how
it's
are you?
Contradictory,
you it's contradictory. So that was a choice that I didn't agree with.
I noticed this really a lot second watching. And the way she stood, when there's moments where she was still and she'd stand and she had this weird
hunch. Like she was very top heavy.
Yeah. And exactly. And she kind of, the way she curved her body, it looked very clumsy and awkward.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you watch her in the Avengers movies, that's not her. With the way she moves, she's capable of looking very graceful and athletic. And this was clearly a choice that conveyed really poorly in the film.
Yeah. No, I wish they hadn't gone that way.
Yeah, it did take away a little bit from the character, I felt.
Yeah, I thought so too.
As far as the movie goes, visually, they did a fabulous job.
There's
the settings were amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's why that movie costs a lot. They concentrate in making this cyberpunk world feel alive, very inspired by things like Blade Runner. But it also takes a lot of stuff shot for shot from the anime.
Yes, it does.
As well,
and I appreciate that.
Despite being very different.
Yeah, and I appreciated the fact that they changed the story enough to make it new, but they still kept some really great scenes from the original.
Oh, they knew an iconic and sometimes just a great moment in the anime. Well, we got to keep that.
Yes. Yeah, like the scenes where she falls off the building at the beginning. Mm-hmm. That great scene where they're chasing the guy in the thermal camouflage suits. I love that they kept that in there. They changed the context of it, but they kept the scene. I like
that. Yeah, that chemical bath thing. Yeah.
Yes.
That was the intro in both movies.
Yeah, so there's some great nods to the original film without taking it whole cloth.
Yeah, watching them back-to-back like this, like, initially, I think I felt a little more like a lot of the tired anime guys who, like, I thought it was okay, but watching it back to back, I'm like, this is actually pretty good.
Aside from Scarlett Johansson looking clumsy, there were some clumsy moments in the film, but on the whole, I think that
it's not a perfect movie by any stretch.
No, but I think that it deserves better than it got.
Yeah, I thought it was better the second time around, especially when you watch them in comparison and then just throw the nostalgia out the window. And to be honest, I didn't have a lot of nostalgia for Ghost in the Shell. There's probably a reason why I never revisited it very often. I don't know if I ever watched it more than the one time.
I know I only watched it the one time. Because it's, when you watch it, and please forgive me, fans of this, but it's a bit of a clumsy story. The storytelling is a little gappy. They expect you to know things. I think that that the anime was made for people who already knew the story to a certain extent.
Well, yeah, sometimes I feel like it's almost reliant that you, and expected that you've read the manga.
Yeah.
It's over expository in moments. It's almost hard to focus that sometimes that dialogue goes so long.
Yes.
and it's delivered so badly in English.
Yeah, and it is distracting. The delivery is a little bit distracting from the rest of the film in some scenes. And there's a lot of stuff where it's all visual, right? And that's the flip side of it. You have these really long pieces of dialogue, and then immediately after you have this something that's just strictly visual, and it doesn't necessarily relate to the conversation that was just had.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you're going, okay, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, well, most of the conversations are about humanity and that question of what she is.
Yes.
that's handled very differently in the remake, where it comes through flashbacks and glitches yeah. as she starts remembering, and they've turned it into more of a conspiracy, which is underlying in the original anime, but handled very differently. So most of her questions about her own humanity happen in expository ways, but isn't really what the film's about.
No.
It's more about this new life form in the Puppet Master and whether it's an actual viable being.
Which gives
birth to something new entirely.
Yeah, and that's one thing I wish they had kept. I like the fact they changed the story somewhat, but I genuinely believe that that part about the AI gaining sentience was really critical to the story, and I think that was really important to the whole Ghost in the Shell theme, is this creation of a new being, and that's completely missing from the remake. And I think that's the one thing that did disappoint me, right, is because they had all the tools and all the pieces there to do something like that, right? Even right to the end. I mean, they could still tell the story the same way, right up to the end where, I can't remember the Michael Pitt's character's name. I think Kenzo, something like along those lines?
No, that was Kuze.
Kuze, sorry, yeah. I knew something like that. But Kuze, I mean, when he dies, right, spoiler, there could have been that moment where she did become something new instead of becoming the person she was.
They do kind of allude to the fact that she says something like, he'll always be with me. So there's a question that maybe he did upload to her, his ghost up to her.
Yeah, but it doesn't
change her. You don't feel like it's changed her. You feel like more through her journey that she's become a more complete person and she's starting to gain her past back. And not that this other person's ghost is interfering with who she is or is joined with her. That said, I mean, he was already part of her memories in her past. Yes. Neither one of them remembered that, though.
Until the end game, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't feel as fulfilling. It was more of a Hollywood ending.
Kuze was, I guess, from my understanding, more of an amalgamation of other antagonists in other Ghost in the Shell animes, like the Laughing Man in Innocence, and I guess some other characters in Standalone Complex, but so they kind of amalgamated into this new character, and I think I liked that they kept some of the Puppet Master aspects, but I wish it would have been more this AI that's gained sentience, this AI that was used for espionage, for doing bad things. I mean, the conspiracy's still there. You still got an organization that's covering up something.
Yeah, and I mean, and they made it more corporate than government in the remake, and all that stuff worked just fine for me. They gave you a new bad guy, right? Like, the bad guy isn't the Puppet Master. The bad guy is Cutter.
Cutter, yeah.
Right? Who, I'll be honest with you, was kind of woefully ineffective as a bad guy until the end there, because you see so little of him. Right? So you don't have a chance to really see him as your antagonist.
I actually thought, because Michael Wincott is so recognizable from, like, The Crow and stuff like that, like, I thought he was going to play more.
And I actually think I would have enjoyed him more in that Cutter role, because he does bad so well.
Wasn't he in Johnny Mnemonic?
No,
I don't know.
No, he was not.
I seem
no.
to remember him being in a cyberpunk, but maybe his roles are starting to mesh in my brain.
I just watched Johnny Mnemonic, and it's a tough word to say. Give me a break. But yeah, he's not in that. I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
It's Udukir is the role that I would have seen Michael Wincott in, I guess. But yeah, no, Udukir plays that role.
Right.
But yeah, I think that as far as remakes go, I think that this one did a better job than most in serving the original material. It did what we would normally ask a remake to do, is take that core kernel of the story and do something new with it. And they did, right?
Yeah. I mean, part of the problem with doing something like this in North America is, one, you're attracting the diehards who are going to be very
critical of it.
And you've got to attract a new audience, that new science fiction audience. And I think maybe the controversy was scared people away from it. Could have been other things that it opened against, but didn't do particularly well. The original anime, I don't know what the budget was in Japanese. It was something like 700 million yen or something. I don't know. That was like a cup of coffee. But it grossed like $10 million worldwide, whereas the remake cost $110 million and only grossed $130 million worldwide.
That is a bomb. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before. Once you calculate in advertising and all that stuff, there's
of that stature needs to triple its money.
Yeah, it certainly didn't.
No.
I mean, they made back their production costs at least, but that's not enough.
No.
I mean, it would have been nice to see her get a new another franchise, but I think it was fine as a standalone movie as well.
I think it's stuff like this, well, just anytime she's been a lead, really, they've never made a ton of money. And people tend to respond to them okay, but they've never been huge successes on their own. And I think that's what's probably kept Marvel Studios from doing a Black Widow movie so far.
Well, it's in production, apparently.
Oh, yeah, no, it's definitely in their slate now, and about time. And I think it was Captain Marvel making $1 billion that changed their mind.
Well, I think...
And other movies like Red Sparrow and Atomic Blonde.
These female-led movies, yeah. And I think part of it, too, is, I mean, Scarlett Johansson, when she picks a role where she's the central character, she picks pretty unique films. I mean, you look at Lucy and Under the Skin?
Yeah, Under the Skin.
Yeah, and this. These are not traditional Hollywood films. None of them. I mean, Lucy should have done much better than it. It is a fabulous film, and if you haven't seen it, see it.
Yeah, Lucy's good.
It's really, really well done. It's a great action drama. Mm-hmm. There's no question that should have done better than it did. But again, it's also not the type of film that appeals to a mass audience. Mm-hmm. It's for people who really want something that makes you think at the end a little bit. This is one of those movies. It is one of those movies where you can't just get yourself immersed in the action and walk out feeling the adrenaline from having watched an action film. Mm-hmm. Right? It's one of those movies where you have to be paying attention to follow the story and to see what the resolution means to those characters. Right? And both of them are the same way. Right? I mean, you think you're getting an action film, but no, there's more happening there. Mm-hmm. Right? They are cerebral as well as emotional.
All right, let's head into the trailer for Ghost in the Shell.
Ghost in the Shell is the next generation of animated feature entertainment. The story centers around a life form that evolves from the internet, seeking asylum in a cybernetic human host. The semi-cybernetic team sent to counter this incredible situation are forced to question the meaning of their own lives while engaged in a non-stop, action-packed fight against an unseen enemy.
Police! Everyone, hit the ground!
All your memories about your wife and your daughter are false and are more like a dream.
With production values exceeding the legendary Akira and a gripping storyline, this picture represents the leading edge in the new animated entertainment genre and marks a milestone in the future of feature-length animated filmmaking for young adult audiences.
Ghost in the Shell. Released theatrically worldwide, fall 1995.
Okay, that was Ghost in the Shell from 1995. Classic anime by Mamoru Oshii, director of Pat LaBar, Assault Girls. That was a pretty good movie. Halo Legends he's done stuff on. There's another live-action movie I really like called Avalon.
Oh, that was good.
With very similar themes to this one.
Yes.
Of course, original manga was Shiro Masamune, who... did Black Magic, M66, Appleseed, and Dominion Tank Police. Dominion, I really like Dominion. Screenplay was by Kanzanori Ito, who also wrote Avalon and Dot Hack Sign.
Which, yeah, that's a series that's gone on for quite some time.
Like, yeah, that's another big one.
It's got a lot of stuff to watch in there.
Yeah. Some good names. I'm not going to worry about the voice cast on this one because, to be honest, most people aren't going to know.
No, and
really, then I got to do Japanese and English guys. But the fun thing is the Japanese dub of the 2017 live action film was done by the original anime voices.
I think that's pretty freaking cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah. It's funny because I went, now that we're talking about the voice actors again, the interesting thing is I looked at the body of work for most of these actors, and they all have these huge bodies of work. They've all done lots of voice acting.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why it was so surprising that it was so stiff and rigid in this. The guy.
Well, I mean, if you watched a lot like we did back then, it was the same troop of people.
Yes.
That was doing these things.
Yeah. But I don't remember it always being as...
Oh, I remember a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah, but I just don't remember them all being quite so stiff as this, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's no performance. It's just somebody reading lines.
Yeah, it does feel like it's just bang, 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 bang.
Except
bang.
For the actor who did the Puppet Master, he delivered a performance. I felt that he, of all the performances, his was by far the strongest.
Which is ironic because he's a stiff AI. So,
yeah.
But you could feel a little bit more in there.
He gave you enough in his voice, and mostly because it was a voice-driven performance in that particular case. It felt like you could tell that he was becoming.
Yeah. Right? Well, I mean, I think the good thing about it is a lot of his dialogue in particular, like the mouth isn't moving on the animation character. So there's less of a rush to fit it in.
Yeah.
And so it's very seldom when the character is actually talking physically.
Yes. They use some devices, and I'm not sure if this was in the just because of the English translation or if it was in the original anime version, but there are those times where there is dialogue when they're not moving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because if it was just to sort of cover up the fact that they couldn't always line up the dialogue with the mouth,
mm-hmm.
but they fit it into this remake, right, where they did the mind talk, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really great nod to it, whether it was delivered or not in the original.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you kind of have to watch it in Japanese and English to really notice, I think, to see if that was deliberate or not. Like sometimes you think they just hit the pause button so they can fit the dialogue in.
Yeah.
Because that's like Japanese. They'll just hold on a frame. And even though you think the animation's spectacular, this is a way to cut down the budget.
Yes. Yeah. There's a few scenes like that where it's really noticeable. There's one scene where the major and the sergeant are coming out of the elevator, and it's frozen for like 4 or 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
No dialogue, nothing. Just
no. It's a pretty common practice in anime in general. Yeah. That's just the way of cutting corners.
Yeah. The interesting thing is it doesn't detract. It actually creates moments of tension when it's done well, as it was in this particular anime.
Yeah. No, their timing's pretty good on those. And I think I agree with you. I think the original story with the Puppet Master is a bit of a stronger one, but I did like that they got into more of a personal story and expanded on the question of humanity in the remake.
Absolutely. Like they took all the right themes
mm-hmm.
and expanded on them, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's... And the addition of some new characters as well, Dr. Ouellette, was a great addition.
Yeah.
Because she was the mother role in...
Yeah,
in
originally remake. When it was written, it was a male part. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they get Juliette Binoche to read for it, and then they automatically changed it. And it makes perfect sense when you think about it, putting another female character in a prominent position for one, but a maternal one as well. Yeah,
exactly. And there's some of the best scenes are actually with her and mm-hmm. the major. There's the scene where she's downloading her memories, right? And then they call back to it later where it's like, we never needed your permission.
Right. Yeah, no, when they say, hey, you know, you've always been property.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
And that really is actually a really poignant moment in the film when she realizes that she's never really been free or independent.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And especially as she's already discovered that they've been lying to her all along mm-hmm. in the sense that she was recovered from an accident, but was instead kidnapped and murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Which is absolutely fucking horrifying when you discover it.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, a cutter has put her in a position to be a weapon and to be used, which was part of what the experiment was all about. But what they didn't realize is when you stick them with a task force like Section 9, you make connections and you make friends, whether she realizes that or not.
Exactly. Those human connections, especially with the sergeant who was, again, the names always escape me.
Batel?
Yes, that's him. Yeah, I don't mind calling him the sergeant because he was.
Mm-hmm.
But there's obviously a closeness there. They connect somehow. They diminished his character in the remake, though. I think they diminished his character quite a bit.
You know, I think they tried to get a little bit more... I actually thought they tried to give him a little bit more. I don't think it worked because he essentially was just her partner in both films. But in this one, they tried to give him a little bit more to grasp onto. I mean, both films, he likes animals, he likes dogs. Yeah. The one thing that I kind of liked is, like, he starts off with the bionic eyes in the original film, whereas this one we kind of see what happens to get him.
And I really like that.
And I loved his look. Like, he looked like he was popped straight out of the anime.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a giant dude.
Yeah, and I love the fact they got somebody that was so much larger than Scarlett Johansson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because when you see those scenes when they're walking side by side, he just towers over and he's broad and he looks like he does in the anime, like you said.
Yeah. Right?
Because he's a big, big guy in the anime.
Yeah, Pillow Askaic. He was in Overlords, Ben-Hur, and Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, yes. And I recognized him.
Who isn't in Game of Thrones?
Well, nobody anymore. he was infinitely more likable in this than he was in Game of Thrones, let me tell you that.
Okay.
Yes, he was an asshole in Game of Thrones, which was nice to see him play a role, a character that was likable.
Yeah, to be honest, when I came out of this movie, I'm like, I really like that guy. He's going somewhere.
Yes, and certainly he's working a lot now since his appearance in Game of Thrones has kind of put him on the map, like it did so many young actors.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how some of these careers materialize as the series has ended.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was really enjoyable. But I think that like in the anime, he was more present. Like he had a lot more scenes, right? And even though they gave him more of an empathetic story arc, I felt like he didn't get as much to do in this.
No, it did feel like he disappeared from time to time.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I meant by diminishing him, is mm-hmm. they diminished his importance. I think even though they gave him more, like I said, a more empathetic storyline or story arc, they took away some of the things that made him work really well in the original. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's because of the added screen time here as well, and a lot of that extra time in this movie goes to the Major's introspection.
Yes.
And let's talk about that for a second. The Major in the original film was Motoko Kasanugi, which was her original Japanese name in the remake, but everybody calls her Major Mira Killian or Miracle. I'm like, man, really, guys? Really?
I will say I missed that. Thank God I did. Otherwise, I probably would have stopped watching and gone, fuck this, Jay. We're not talking about it.
To be honest, I didn't pick up on it during the movie. It was in my readings later. Well,
yeah, and I don't think they...
Thank God I didn't pick up on it.
Yeah, I don't think they said all of it together at any point in the movie, which would have probably brought it more to your attention.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah.
Because, if they'd said that, I probably would have just turned the fucking thing off. We're doing something else, Sam.
Yeah, no, that's pretty lazy.
No, they think they're clever. I'm sure they thought they were clever. I'm sure the four screenwriters thought they were very clever.
Yes, and there were lots of times where you could tell they thought they were clever.
But. Yeah, well, let's talk about the screenwriters here for a second of the remake. We got Jamie Moss from Street Kings, William Wheeler, who's the lead producer for Ray Donovan, Aaron Kruger. We actually talked about a couple of times.
Yes, we did. Our only connection that I could find as well.
Episode 57, The Ring, and 117, Reindeer Games. Also responsible for the scripts for many Transformers movies and the new Dumbo movie.
So he's pretty hit or miss.
More miss than hit,
yes.
Yeah.
But he still gets work, so he must be doing something right.
I mean, you get work when your movies don't bomb. I mean, you can complain all you want about the Transformers movie, but they made a bazillion dollars.
Yes. Yeah. And apparently Dumbo's quite good. I haven't seen it myself, but...
Yeah, most people haven't seen it. That's part of the problem. Yeah. But the one person I know who got to see an early release says it's just as good as Big Fish, which is high praise in my mind, because I think that's Tim Burton's best movie, so...
Yes. Yeah, no... Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure we'll talk about it in depth and at length at some point.
Future, probably near future, because it's probably going to be available on disc any day now.
Yes. Right. And it's unfortunate, but I mean, Disney was due for a miss, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But we'll talk about that when we get to it.
Aladdin was kind of going through similar growing pains as well, with, again, the Robin Williams role.
Yes, and I mean, it released this week, and the praise
it's reviewing is great.
Yeah, it's getting some serious praise, so I am interested to see that one.
So everybody's getting over their knee-jerk reactions again, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
Unfortunately, Ghost in the Shell didn't recover from theirs, but...
No, well, I think that was it the right film to remake and to spend that kind of money on?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they couldn't have done it until now. No. I mean, it was just unintentable. But then again, I mean, The Matrix takes a lot from this movie and did that 15 years ago. More? 20 years ago?
It was 20 years ago this year, actually.
Yeah, so that's crazy to think about what they achieved 20 years ago.
Exactly, and I think that the problem is they were trying to appeal to that Matrix audience to a certain extent, but it's not a Matrix movie, even though there's obvious comparisons. I think that just anime has a very devoted audience, and I just think they had trouble getting people excited about a remake that most people didn't even know the original existed of.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem is it's famous to the anime crowd, and the only one more famous would be Akira.
Yes. Those are sort of the two keystones of anime.
Yeah, and that's another one that's been talked about and talked about and talked about as a live-action movie. Oh my God, well, if this doesn't work, why would Akira? Again, you think a lot of people know about it, but they don't.
No, they don't. And the thing
is, I'm wondering what Battle Angel did now that we're talking about this, because another similar thing where great anime, doubt most people knew what it was.
Yeah, and then I think that's the biggest problem with remaking anime is the very specific audience that would recognize and go, hey, I'm interested in seeing that, or the moment, oh God, please know why.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's kind of what happens with these genre types that have a more limited audience than most, especially in North America.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we have anime fans, and certainly there is an anime community, but it's not as large as people think it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you go to the conventions and stuff, you would think it's very large, but maybe
it's a microcosm.
But it is. And that is not enough to make it a viable North America release, at least to justify a $110 million budget.
Particularly this style of anime, the sort of the darker, grittier sci-fi anime, isn't as popular as some of the more cutesy stuff, like the Sailor Moons and the stuff with the furry tails and all that stuff. I don't even know what it is, what they're from, because that wasn't the anime I was interested in. I liked this darker stuff.
Yeah, that's why I turned to anime as well, because it offered something that a lot of animation didn't, because the Japanese treated anime like any other genre. So you could have more mature subjects and more complex storytelling within them. So that was the stuff I was always drawn to. I'm like, there's plenty of cutesy stuff here. Yeah. I don't need to watch more of that.
Yeah, exactly. And Japan, or anime in particular, was the only sort of film genre that was tapping into the whole cyberpunk genre.
Mm-hmm.
Right, where I could see the stuff that I really enjoyed reading, and I wanted to see, because Johnny Mnemonic and this movie came out in 1995, right? So that was a good year for cyberpunk. Neither one aged particularly well.
Yeah, and neither one did well. Ghost in the Shell probably did particularly well because it probably didn't cost a lot, but Johnny Mnemonic did not.
No, it did not. And if in rewatching it, you can see why. It's a clumsy film. And this certainly the effects that they had don't stand up anymore. And some of the performances are pretty awful. But it's still a fun watch. I've still enjoyed watching it again. But again, I like cyberpunk. I love the Neuromancer novel and the subsequent Sprawl novels. Right? And the irony is those novels are sort of the ones that spawned the term cyberpunk, and Gibson freaking hates the term.
Yeah. Well, until you come up with a better one, we'll keep calling it cyberpunk.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, it made me think that I'd love to see, like, a Shadowrun movie as well. Like, all these things that sort of were inspired by this genre that really didn't jump out at people for the longest time. And then 10 years after sort of it existed, all of a sudden we started to have things like Ghost in the Shell, Johnny Mnemonic, The Matrix, right? Which took its name directly from Neuromancer, for the record.
Oh, yeah. I mean, The Matrix just went everywhere. It's like, okay, let's grab a little bit of William Gibson, and heavily influenced by Japanese anime, specifically Ghost in the Shell, and Blade Runner, of course, and it is a love letter to that entire genre.
It is, yes. And I'm not complaining. I still love the first movie.
Oh, it's a case of diminishing returns and diminishing ideas.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm a little scared when I hear about a Matrix revival is now being talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, the second and third movies don't really exist. I was happy with one movie, and it could have stayed that way.
Mm-hmm. I quite like the second one, but yeah, the third one definitely falls apart.
There were parts of the second I liked, but from the opening scene, they diminished it in that opening scene right away, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. And it was really hard for me to
buy back in. I'm one of the few people who really like that end scene, just with the old man in a chair talking some crazy dialogue.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there are parts.
I love that stuff.
Yeah. If the opening scene had been different, the second would have been a great movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get back to Ghost in the Shell here. 2017 was directed by Rupert Sanders, who directed Snow White and the Huntsman. Yeah, I know. Every time we talk about the behind the scenes, it just gets worse.
Yeah. And explains a lot.
It does. And maybe why it's kind of meh. Like, there's a lot of good ideas in this movie that just don't feel like they're very well executed. Starring Scarlett Johansson as the Major, Pilo Isaac as Batao, Takeshi Kitano, or Beat Kitano?
Yeah, Beat Takeshi.
Beat Takeshi. He is Aramaki. He's a Japanese legendary actor whose name I can't pronounce properly, apparently.
Yeah. And he's been in North American films for a number of them as well.
Oh, yeah. He's done quite a few North American and Japanese films. Battle Royale, yeah. 1 and 2, Zatoichi.
Yes.
Those movies.
Right. And
Zatoichi? Zatoichi, I think, is actually probably the better.
Yeah, guaranteed we're going to mangle anything that's not English, let's face it. We mangle English.
We do. Juliette Binoche was Dr. Ouellette, and she's probably the best actress on this cast with The English Patient and Chocolat,
yes,
as part of her resume. Michael Pitt was Kuze, and he was in Funny Games and the Hannibal TV series.
And I was pleasantly surprised to see him. To be honest with you, his part is relatively small. Mm-hmm. And the first time I watched this, I don't think I was paying that much attention. I think I had kind of checked out because I didn't realize it was him the first time I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big fan of Michael Pitt. I think that he's one of those actors who picks his roles very carefully. Mm-hmm. And he always, always delivers.
Yeah, and he did really good with, he is the main bad guy in this film, or antagonist, I should say, because I wouldn't call him a bad guy.
No.
But he gives a hell of a performance, even though most of him is CGI.
Yes, yeah. And his screen time, he only maybe gets 10 minutes of screen time.
Yeah.
In an hour and 45-minute film.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, this guy's, much like the Puppet Master in the original film, has been hacking into servers and human beings. Yes. Most human beings in this world have enhancements of some sort or another. Not everybody.
That's right. Yes. No, much like in the original in the original movie. And that brings me to one of the things that I didn't like about the remake that they kind of just glossed right over is in the original, everybody has a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's been enhanced has a ghost, right? They don't talk about that in the remake at all, right?
Yeah, they only really mention the ghost at the outset of the film and near the end.
Yes, but it's part of the dialogue.
It comes up all the time in the anime.
It does, yes, yeah. Right? Because there's that scene where that government official's secretary gets hacked, mm-hmm. and they talk about her ghost,
yeah,
right, and how her ghost has been hacked. So
yeah, and these people are being reprogrammed to do what the Puppet Master wants in the original film. It's trying to get away from the people pursuing him, essentially.
Yeah.
It's more vengeance-based in the remake.
It is. And in neither case do they really explain that. Well, in the original, they explain it really well.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't explain that very well, because there's that scene in the water there where she chases the guy in the thermo camouflage. And he's the first one where they really sort of address that he's being hacked.
Yeah, the garbage guy who thinks he's got a family.
Yeah.
And thankfully that retains in the remake as well. And yeah, he's been hacked and made to think he's got a family. And when he looks at a photo of himself, he sees children.
Yeah, which is great storytelling.
Yeah.
It's fabulous storytelling, and it works really well in both films. But in the original, they explain that to you early on in the film, that this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They never explain it to you in the remake.
No, not until they capture the garbage man.
And even then, they don't explain it.
No, they don't. They realize, like, he fully on believes they need a family and stuff, and you kind of feel his panic when he's being told otherwise. Right. He's been reprogrammed with this life he never had.
Yeah. And
in the anime, they say, like, yes, he's been hacked, his personality has been overridden, like, can we get it back?
Which is far more terrifying.
It is. And just that realization in a there is some of that comes through in the performance itself.
That guy's performance was amazing.
Yeah, but that little added thing of saying, can we get him back to the way he was, and to know that the answer is no.
Exactly.
And it's terrifying.
Yeah, and I mean, we could go back to that Michael Wincott character who could have taken the place of the secretary. Right. And where they have that scene where they're explaining mm-hmm. what's happening to him. Mm-hmm. Right. Because he's an ambassador of some sort. So he would have been a great replacement for a secretary where the puppet master is trying to get more information. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a little disappointing they missed out on that opportunity to talk about everybody else's ghosts.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But I mean, for all its flaws, I mean, it's still a solid piece of filmmaking for the most part. It looks great. There's no flat performances in this movie. Everybody who was in it still delivered. Mm-hmm. The best work they were capable of, mm-hmm. given the material and direction.
You know, at least with Blade, I think they're almost, we're trying to take a note from Blade Runner in a way, with these more subdued, understated performances. Yes. And they're good performances, but there's this, I don't know, there's a slowness to that performance that I've never taken to.
And I think that's that's direction. Again, mm-hmm. we frequently blame actors for the way that they come across on screen.
I mean, I didn't like it in Blade Runner.
Well, I love Blade Runner, but a lot of people don't.
It's, you know, it's a movie I always say I like, and I like the original Blade Runner. I don't like 2049 at all. Sorry, guys. I know I'm going to get written up on that one.
I don't think you're a minority on that one, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
But to be honest, both movies put me asleep.
The original Blade Runner, in its original, the original theatrical version, I can still watch over mm-hmm. and over again. But the extended versions and director's cuts and all that stuff, they've got so much...
What, you didn't like the unicorn?
No. So much wasted screen time on there. In those, there's a reason that it was cut down to theatrical release, because it tells a story in a concise manner. And I think that's one of the things about this movie, nice segue, that is also the problem, is they added enough to it to make it more interesting, but then they went a little bit far, and I think that they could have trimmed it down by 15-20 minutes to make it a tighter story. That's part of it. Like you said, there's these subdued performances, these long expository moments that could have been trimmed down just a little bit, just to trim a little bit of time.
Well, I mean, the story along a little bit faster. Expository moments are, especially in English, in the anime, go on for a long time, and it's not a long movie.
No.
The remake only being
15 minutes longer?
Yeah, roughly that. Yeah. Feels like an hour longer at times.
It does, yeah. It just needs to be tightened up just a smidge.
Yeah, just like nips and tucks here and there, I think would have really helped the movie.
Yeah, the pacing was just a little bit odd, I think. Knowing who the director is, that's kind of his MO. I don't mm-hmm. want to say his thing or his trademark, because it's not a good thing. Because you watch No Way and the Huntsman, it's the same kind of thing. Everything just seems a smidge longer than it needs to be. You know, 30 seconds a minute, but you get enough of those scenes that are 30 seconds a minute long, longer than they need to be,
yeah,
it starts to drag the movie out, and you disengage from it. Right? And that's kind of what happened here. Like I said, the first time I watched it, I obviously disengaged because I didn't even recognize Michael Pitt in the few moments he had.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
well, I think that's easily forgiven. I mean, Jesus, most of them is CGI'd. So.
But you know what? I recognized that actor by his voice. The second that he came on screen this time, I heard the voice and I went, that's Michael Pitt. Because mm-hmm. he has a very unique voice. So, yeah, like I said, I was not giving it my whole attention the first time, obviously. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think that has to do with the way it was shot and the way it was directed. And you can't see my grand hand movements here.
It's a good thing you're, like, across the table from me, otherwise you'd be hitting me in the face.
Yes. Well, I'm getting better about not hitting. I'm going out instead of across now, at least, eh?
You know, if you were in a big stadium, you would totally be hitting somebody in the face.
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, that stadium could be a football stadium, a baseball stadium, a hockey arena.
A concert, maybe even.
Hey, does this sound like a great time to plug seatgiant.ca and .com?
I think it does, Jay.
I think it might. Segways. Maybe that should be our promo code. But we can get you a deal at cgiant.ca and .com. And if you're into just getting out of the house and doing something and trying to find some cheap tickets online, cgiant.ca and cgiant.com are your hookups. And when you order tickets online through SeatGiant, you can use our promo code INVASION at checkout for an extra discount.
We don't know how much it is, but it's an extra discount.
It's even less than the tickets already are.
You might at least save taxes.
That's right. I have no idea what our discount code gives us. I'll have to look it up. I'll have to buy some tickets on CGI myself and get out of my house and stop editing for a day.
Yeah, there we go. Yes, but yes, go to Sea Giant.
They're a game changer. All right, so let's go to the trailer for Ghost in the Shell 2017, and we'll be right back to close things out.
I have been watching you. You have to remember.
I saw someone down there. He wasn't human.
He's a known terrorist. And he's killed again.
They didn't just kill them. They hacked into their minds.
He's everywhere. Nowhere.
I will find him. And I will kill him.
Never talk about your past.
I don't remember much. It was fragments.
There was an attack.
You were dying. We saved you. And now you save others.
Everything they told you was a lie. You had a family. Remember that.
What are you?
They stole it.
How many were there before me?
She was supposed to have a clean brain. I order you to terminate.
Major! They created me, but they cannot control me.
All right, that was Ghost in the Shell 2017.
Yeah, you know, as we said a couple times already, that it was more enjoyable on the second watch. I still don't think it's a great film.
Yeah, but it didn't diminish in my mind on the second watch. It actually was better on the second watch because I was looking for, you know, you're dissecting it a little bit more. And I'm like, actually, this is actually a pretty good movie. It has a lot of subtext to it liked. There's actually a really interesting moment where the Major picks up a hooker just to explore humanity.
Oh, that was a lovely scene. I thought that was a truly lovely scene.
Yeah, which I guess they cut down. Like, she actually kisses her in the extended scene of that.
I think I like it better the way it was, though.
Yeah, because you get the idea of what she's doing, just trying to figure out, well, what's this feel like? My cyborg body doesn't feel these things.
Yes, yeah, and the juxtaposition of her artificial hands touching the skin,
mm-hmm.
right, and asking her like to take off the mask so that she can see what she really looks like,
mm-hmm.
and then touching her. There's a, again, it's in context, it's a really incredible moment. It really does a lot to explain this character and the struggle that she's going through,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that she has clearly she has no feeling, and they never say it outright, but this
is when she stops taking that drug that she's told keeps her enhancements from her brain from rejecting the enhancements,
yes.
which is of course not true. It's just kind of numbing her brain.
Exactly, right? And making her more malleable,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so that they can continue to control her.
Yeah, they had made her Japanese character part of like an anti-technology commune,
which I thought was genius, but then
it's
wasted.
A bit heavy-handed irony, yes.
Yeah. I don't think that they did a very good job of really communicating the irony of the fact that she was anti-technology and now she is technology.
Kuze was part of the same...
Yeah.
Same...
And they were lovers, which, again, a little heavy-handed.
Yeah.
I think that was unnecessary. I think that their connection could have simply have been through being through the same experiences.
Yeah, Kuze just being the prototype.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't even have to be part of the same project. He's a prototype of the same project.
Yes.
They didn't have to be part of the same commune.
That's right. They didn't have to have known each other prior to
this. And I think that would have been just fine. They didn't need to be that kind of connection. Then it becomes a bit tropey to me.
Yes. I mean, I groaned. I actually audibly groaned. I'm like, oh, why did you need to do that? It wasn't necessary. Right? They could have been even part of the lawless land, I think is what they called it, mm-hmm. or the lawless zone. Right, but they didn't need to be as intimate as they were.
No, I would have preferred if they didn't know each other at all.
Yeah, I think it would have made the connection that they made as...
Because they certainly treated the characters as if they didn't know each other through pretty much the entire movie. Yeah.
Well, and that's partly because they don't. Neither of them has their original memories, mm-hmm. right? But
Kuze says, like, get off the drugs, you'll start to remember things.
Yes, right.
Even though it clearly isn't working that well on him.
Because he's so focused on what he does remember, which is the pain when they took him apart. Right? He actually says, I remember them taking me apart.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I remember them literally taking apart his body.
Which is horrific to even think about.
Yeah, and it's, again, another really great moment in this film.
And you can understand his anger at that.
Yeah, and you empathize with him because he's not
defensive self is self-defense.
Yes. They set him up as the antagonist, and I love the bait and switch, right, where you think that he's going to be the bad guy, but it turns out to be completely somebody else, and that's a great way of changing it up, is giving you the bad guy from the original, essentially. Mm-hmm. Right, but then saying, "Well, no, guess what? It's not really him. It's the guy who did this to them."
Yeah, it was like Cutter's Robotics Company.
Yes,
yeah,
Honka. Yeah, the only reason I remember it is because I read it as Hanaka,
mm-hmm.
and then when they kept saying Honka, I'm like, "What the fuck? I don't. That's not, they're saying it wrong." And then I saw it in print. I'm like, "Oh no, I read it wrong." So that was on me.
Fair enough. Yeah. It's not just me who misreads things.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's an easy enough mistake to make because you expect that extra vowel and it wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. Right? Sounds more Japanese.
Yeah, it does. It does sound more Japanese with that extra vowel in it. But that's just my Caucasian North American interpretation of it. Mm-hmm. So that does not make me right. But it did confuse me. There was something else I wanted to bring up about the original that...
We could talk about the ending here where she basically is sacrificing her own body in defense of the puppet master and Kuze too when she's fighting the spider tank and just tearing herself apart to get into the tank.
I love how they kept that almost note for note.
Yeah, it looked really good.
It looked really good. It looked really good in the live action. Like, mm-hmm. It was really well done. I mean, they toned down some of the, I'm reluctant to say gore, but some of the destruction of mm-hmm. her, because at the end of the spider tank battle in the
original,
she was a torso and an arm and her head, and that's about all that was left of her.
And her original skin looks more like skin.
Yeah.
Like, she's kind of got this gelatin bodysuit of some sort.
Yes.
That's just so Scarlett Johansson doesn't have to run around naked.
Yes. And rightfully so. I mean, yeah. I understand. I mean, she's done nudity, and that's fine. But I don't think... What you can get away with in anime and animation, you can't get away with in live action.
No, and it was just too much. So.
Yeah.
And the original manga gets pretty graphic at times, too.
Yes. Yeah.
With its nudity.
It's funny how the Japanese have these sort of mixed morals about nudity. It's very strange. I think they did a great job of giving a nod to the major skin from the original mm-hmm. by giving her... I mean, I think it's still supposed to be her skin, but it's not humanoid. And I think that mm-hmm. actually works really well for the remake. Because of her questioning her humanity, she has a female body shape, mm-hmm. but she still doesn't have the other accoutrements of being a female. She does not have nipples. She does not have sexual organs. She's basically sexless, even though she's not genderless.
Mm-hmm. Even though in the anime she was. But yeah, I mean, that's just to keep it down to PG-13.
I think that's part of it, but I think that they did a good... It worked well for the film, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, that spider tank scene, it was great. And her body's pretty much destroyed. Like, the helicopters wind up shooting up her body by the end, but she is uploaded to this little girl body that Batu found on the black market.
Yes, yeah. Which made that ending really
kind of creepy.
Kind of creepy. certainly a lot more powerful.
Yeah. Right?
Because it's a new being in a new body, mm-hmm. in a child's body, no less. Right. Mm-hmm. So it was really smart filmmaking in that sense, right? And storytelling, mm-hmm. right? Because you have
well,
all
it
these
also
sort of
signifies the rebirth of the Major. Having now merged with the Puppet Master,
exactly. Yeah. So, and that's what I was sort of saying is not just the body that's new. Mm. This is a new being, right? So,
whereas in the live action film, it was Kuze's body that was destroyed by the helicopters.
That's right. And yeah, they have that ending at the grave. Speaking of Tropy.
Oh yeah, her human grave.
Yes,
where she reconnects to her with her mother. Like, yeah, you don't have to come here anymore, and Mom realizes that that's actually her daughter.
Yeah, again, didn't need to be there. Like I said, one of the things that could have been trimmed out.
Yeah, I think they'd already kind of covered it in their first meeting. Like, you know, you get the feeling Mom's figured it out already there.
She's got a sense of something, yeah. There's that great bit of dialogue where she says, "Well, you look at me the way she used to." Mm-hmm. Yeah, is it? You can't see me rolling my eyes. right. We're identifying all these fabulous moments in this film, and somehow it doesn't quite gel as well as it should.
Yeah, you know, here's this moment that you should be touched by, and you roll your eyes at it. Yeah. So that's telling me it's not working.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, if she had got to the apartment, seen her, and then kept going, I think that would have just said more.
I think so as well. I think that the moment with the cat was great, mm-hmm. turns the cat back over to her, and then keeps going. Right, but the whole, do you want to come in for tea, made that, no sense.
No, because it doesn't feel normal.
It does not feel normal. Right? it was very, very...
It feels very forced.
Forced, that's exactly the word I'm looking for. Yeah, there's just something, there's these pieces. Like I said, the dialogue itself wasn't bad. It was the situation that made it fail,
mm-hmm.
right? Because she never should have been in that room anyhow. I mean, I understand what they're trying to do, and they're trying to make something new out of something that already exists. They were trying to give her connections to her past. This wasn't the way to do it.
No. If she would have just gone and had that reticence to not go in.
Yeah. I think the connection with the cat, because they show you the cat during one of her glitches earlier on. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's the same cat.
Yeah. Because it's only been a year.
Yeah. And showing the cat, and even that bit of dialogue, I said, oh, he really likes you. And then having her giving the cat back and a thank you. Then going on, I think would have been far more powerful, and it would have been just as effective. I know we're remaking things again, but that's part of what we do.
Mm. And it wouldn't have slowed down the pace of the movie as much as that scene did.
That scene was 5-6 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it was slow.
Yeah, it really was.
It was really slow. And I think both these films do have a bit of an identity crisis because they're not really an action film. They're not actually a drama. There's this sort of meshing of them, and the original manages just a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They give you that right balance of stuff happening in an action sense, and then you have your moments of exposition. As long as they are, they don't feel like they ruin the pacing of the film.
No.
Whereas in this remake, the moments of exposition really are what slow the film down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're necessary, but they weren't as well done as the rest of the film was, even though some of the dialogue was really well written.
Yeah, I thought so. Like I said, this is certainly isn't a perfect adaptation of the material, but it's a good one, like, for the most part. You know, the original film, and I think maybe is rated a little higher than it should be, gets a 8.0 out of 10 on IMDb, whereas the remake is a 6.4.
Which is about where I think it should be.
Yeah, and I think that's fairly accurate as far as where I would rate it as well.
Yeah, because it's not a terrible film, but it's not the film it could have been.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would have taken much to make it the film it could have been. And, I mean, really, it's not even taking anything out of it, mm-hmm. Or changing that much within it. It's just smoothing it out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I would have been fine with an hour and a half, with a little bit less dialogue, trimming down a few of the scenes that didn't quite fit.
Mm-hmm. I also had to question the budget on this thing at $110 million. I think they probably could have made something cheaper, because I don't know who's projecting, you know, half a billion dollars or whatever on this movie. I'm not sure what they were predicting, but $110 million. Somebody certainly thought they were going to make buco bucks off this thing.
Well, and I think that somebody, whoever decided to give it the green light, went, well, you know what? This is a really well-loved piece of anime. And it's probably one is one of the better known. I mean, like you mentioned them earlier, Ghost in the Shell and Akira are probably the two best known.
This was DreamWorks, by the way.
Yeah, right. So, they have the ambition to do things like this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that they were counting on at least name recognition, that people would have at least heard of Ghost in the Shell. I think that was optimistic thinking, to be honest.
Yeah, 22 years later. I mean, granted, there was a lot more material had been released from Japan at that point, but none of it, not a single piece of it, got the same kind of recognition as the original film did.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's where we can throw some money behind this, because people are going to recognize the name, mm-hmm. even if they haven't seen the original film. And I think that was where they kind of overextended themselves. I think by tightening it up, I mean, most of that budget clearly went to Johansson's paycheck.
I'm sure a lot went to Johansson's paycheck.
And the CGI, setting up that world had to cost.
To be honest, the world looked more anime than the anime did.
It did, yes.
Yeah. Like, it still felt like a bit of gritty Hong Kong. Mm. They'd have things here and there, but there was way more sci-fi in their world in the remake that was just wasted budget money. They did it well. Those holograms look great. Yeah. You could tell they're mocap performances and not just whole cloth made stuff, because they looked really good.
They looked really good, and I really enjoyed the visuals.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of time and care that went into those visuals.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe one of the failings of the film as well, is they focused too much on the way they wanted the film to look.
Yeah.
That they kind of lost sight of the story occasionally.
Yeah, when the background shouldn't overshadow the foreground of the painting, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think there could have been some tightening up of budget money there, where this could have been at least semi-profitable.
Yeah, I think that
if they would have trimmed this down to about an $80 million budget. Problem is, you probably wouldn't have got Scarlett Johansson for $80 million.
No, and then you have to justify even that size of a budget. That's the kind of...
In fact, that probably, I mean, I don't know for a fact, but I bet you that was probably the initial budget, and then getting somebody like a Scarlett Johansson probably allowed them to spend more money.
And that's possible. That is entirely possible. And
it isn't always a good thing, but like I said at the beginning of this, like, they wouldn't have gotten that budget without a star.
No, it's kind of one of those catch-22s, isn't it?
Yeah. Granted, I mean, she did all right. I mean, she grew out her hair to do that. That wasn't a wig. She dyed her hair with the black with the blue tips and to look like the character. And
yeah, and I mean, when you look, like, if you were to put those side by side, she did a great job of capturing the look of, and kudos to the hair and makeup team, because they did a really good job of working with her. And there were even a few moments there where she almost looked like she had, I'm gonna mangle this word, the folds, the Asian eye folds. Oh. Like, there were a couple moments there where they did something where she almost looked Asian.
There are times that I thought that as well. Yeah. I read that there was this technology they had, and it made me cringe a little bit, and thankfully it was never used, to make certain characters look more Japanese. Which is very cringy when you think about that.
It is, yeah.
Thankfully, they chose not to utilize it.
Absolutely, but because that's when that's when that controversy becomes valid.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. Then it's just like, if you're making Caucasians look Japanese, then just fucking cast a Japanese person.
Yeah, exactly. I think that they did a good job, and I think that there were a couple moments where you did sort of see her, where she looked like she almost had Japanese eyes. This is probably hugely inappropriate, but that's okay.
That said, I mean, I think casting a Japanese person in this part wouldn't have made any difference.
No,
yes, I'm sure Scarlett brought a lot of money and recognition, and a lot of other cast fell into place because of her, and especially that budget money. But casting a Japanese person in that part wouldn't have changed this movie at all.
No, I don't think it would have. I think that if, actually, going back to budget and spending, if they had cast a less known Asian actor in that role,
I would have been probably a little bit more on board, because you're more believing the character than, oh, this is Scarlett Johansson in... She's become one of those people who's so recognizable that you see the actor more than the character, and that's a problem sometimes with these overexposed actors.
It is a problem sometimes, and you get oversaturated, and that's, I think you've hit kind of a nail on the head there. And certainly I think that if they'd cast somebody who people kind of knew and kept the production budget down and maybe spent a little more on or a little on the extra on the advertising budget to show people how good this film looks, people might have gone to see it.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my mind, right? Because it's...
I mean, clearly it wasn't the actors that attracted the audience because they didn't.
They didn't, exactly.
So...
And we talked about this before, and we're going to talk about it again, I'm sure, is studios need to stop relying on big names to draw people to the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I mean,
they need to make
it works,
good films.
It doesn't always work, and you don't always want to rely on the stars you have. I mean, you got to make new stars.
Yes.
Yeah. And you can't make new stars if you don't give them a chance, and especially ethnic actors. There's plenty of good, talented ethnic actors out there that aren't getting the roles, and it does bug me. I'm not sure this is the movie that the, you know, people needed to die on.
Yeah.
Probably should have been Lone Ranger, but but this was more of a molehill than the mountain to climb. But we've seen this happen time and time again, and usually just, you know, go with the right person rather than the star.
Exactly. And I mean, it's through no fault of Scarlett Johansson, but you're right.
I don't think this was a specifically Japanese role. I want to make that very clear. Like, then they've written it in such a way where it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it's
no,
ambiguous.
Yeah.
But, yes, we do see Scarlett Johansson more than her character.
We really do, yeah. Because I think in the animated original, her character is more ethnically ambiguous than any specific culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I liked that about that character. It's really hard to cast that way, though, in live action. Right?
Yeah.
But I think that part of the reason they wanted to go with Scarlett Johansson is because she'd been in several Avengers movies already. She'd shown that she was capable of handling the action choreography.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there are other actors out there who can do that.
Yeah.
Case in point, we'll go back to The Matrix. Look at Carrie Ann Moss, who nobody even knew of.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they made her a star, however briefly.
Yeah, Wachowskis are really good about that. Like, they cast who they think is right, and they want to make stars out of new actors. And you look at something like Sense8 with this huge multicultural cast. And
with nobody recognized.
Nobody recognized. Well, a couple.
Yeah.
But for the most part, not super recognizable to North American audiences. And the beautiful performances by everybody in that show. Granted, it didn't find an audience because it was cut short before we really got to fall in love with these guys, but still a wonderful show. Another one that was probably too expensive for Netflix to continue.
I think that was more the case than anything else, right?
It was clearly a very expensive movie or
series
to shoot because it was all shot in locations around the world, and that's a lot to handle for a television series.
It really is. I mean, I'm going to talk about it a little bit more because I think that this... does tie into a certain extent, is the Wachowskis are really good at long format storytelling for a while. Because the second season of Sense8, same thing that it did happen with The Matrix, is they start off really strong, give you this great first season. Second season starts off strong and then kind of wanders off on you. And that's kind of the way
they're really good about building the world.
Yeah.
And once the world is established, then they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I felt about Sense8 too. And I think that's part of the reason, the second reason it got canceled is because it was clear that they were kind of wandering on the direction a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And not as bad as they did on The Matrix, but it was there. I mean, I think it was a great return to form for them because they had made some pretty mediocre films. Right? And I think that giving them a long format setting was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I think they should have kept it at one season.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, I think that it would have been a lot...
Yeah, to be honest, I've been trying because it's been a while for me, but I really liked first season, and then they did the little special, and now I'm trying to watch the final season, and I'm having a tough time getting back into it.
Yes, because it wanders, and you're not quite sure where the direction is anymore, right? And I think that's because they kind of used up all their ideas in the first season. Oh, we're getting a second season.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I think that's kind of the same way The Matrix was too. You want another one? Oh no! Right, where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody would have been happy if it just been a one-off, and it would have been this amazing film that's in science fiction history. So
yeah, and I don't think that the sequels diminish it, but I don't think that they serve it very well either.
No, I think that second one certainly
has lots of great elements. Like,
I think it had a mixed things, and then that third one, it just, well, okay, now we had, you have to watch the anime and play the video game to understand what's happening in this movie, and by the way, all of your main characters are secondary characters in this movie.
Yes.
So that didn't help.
No, not at all. No, it was a confusing mess.
Yeah.
And kind of like this movie, this movie's not confusing. If you watch it and you're paying attention, there's nothing confusing about it.
No, I think the remake's actually more clear and concise than the anime is, but I think it only comes off confusing in the anime if you're watching the dub of it, because it's like, woo, these flat performances, you start checking out, and you actually feel like you're struggling to listen to the dialogue at times.
Yes, yeah.
So I highly recommend if you're going to do this challenge like we did, watch it in its original Japanese version.
Yes, and turn on your subtitles,
yeah.
If I had access to the subtitle version, I would have watched it subtitle for sure. But both are worthwhile watches. Even though the 95, even the way the story's told kind of feels 95, mm-hmm. it's still an enjoyable watch. And I think that's...
Yeah, no, it does feel like it's from its time.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that it does feel like it hasn't aged particularly well. But that said, it certainly, as an anime, left its mark and continues to this day in other forms.
It's got a wealth of source material. I didn't even count how many follow-up films.
Yeah, there was Ghost in the Shell. Well, I think they did the series and some along the way, because there's kind of two separate timelines from what I understand, and that just makes me roll my eyes in and of itself. It's like, okay, Ghost in the Shell 2 Innocence is a direct sequel to this, but then it kind of travels a different thread in the TV series, which gets its own movies and OVAs, and...
yeah, and... That's kind of what happens with a lot of the anime, is they're like,
we screwed it up, let's start again.
Yeah. Right, or they move into different formats, right?
I've already lost count on how many Neon Genesis Evangelion versions for that final act there are. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. I thought the final act in the original was pretty good. I mean, yeah, they ran out of money, but... Another guy talking in a chair.
Yes. Yeah. No, but yeah, I will be honest, my anime phase was brief.
There's nice Easter eggs in here as well in the 2017 live action version, not to just the original Ghost in the Shell. Obviously, there's certainly some visuals stripped directly from, and it's really cool to see them in live action and with the full CG special effects and stuff. It looks really cool. But there are little nods too. There's like Kuze when he kind of does the bang bang, and he's just laying on the ground. So that's kind of a nod to Cowboy Bebop, which another anime I really love. So
and the motorcycle scene, a total homage to Akira. Yes,
yeah.
Right. It's like, that's their way of saying you're never going to fucking see the live action. This is all you're getting.
And to be honest, the more attempts I see North America do of anime, the more I think they probably shouldn't.
Well, I just don't think that North American directors get it. I think if you went with a Japanese director who is familiar with the genre, like the director of the original of this even, right, you get him to do the live action version of it, I think that he'll bring that understanding of anime to the film. Right?
Yeah, I mean, clearly that director had done live action as well as anime, so he knew how to direct both. He could be right there with the key animators doing the CGI and know exactly what's happening and still be able to direct a performance out of his actors in a live action sense. I mean, sometimes it's tough to go back and forth, but guys like Brad Bird have proven that you can.
Yeah, absolutely. So if they want to continue doing these, I think that if Akira ever materializes, you need to bring in
Otomo.
Yes,
I think that's his name.
Yeah, or any other anime director who's capable of doing both.
Yeah,
right. Who's done live action and anime? I think that would be the best way to go. And I think Akira as a story, and just the way the world is built, I think it lends itself better to live action than
it might, but it's also a more Japanese reliant story than this one.
That's the flip side of it, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's this misconception that a lot of this anime are action films. They are stories. Mm-hmm. There's action in them, and there's some really fabulous action in them. But there's also lots and lots of dialogue and exposition and storytelling and and very visual stuff.
Yes. I mean, we've definitely seen a lot of anime directors who know to bring something else to it. There was a fantastic movie just a couple years ago called The Red Turtle, which I highly recommend. That's not an action movie piece at all. And it's a very artfully done anime piece by Japanese animators to make it look like it's French. it's this really great thing if you're an animation fan in general. I think of something like Perfect Blue, which is very much a kind of horror drama with a lot of emotion to it.
Yeah, and you know, I remember, because that's one's another one that's sort of gone on to do more, right? I remember loving the first one I saw and going, this is freaking amazing. And then I kind of fell out of my anime phase. I guess it was a phase for me. It wasn't something that I sort of glommed onto and continued to follow. But now you're thinking about it, I'm thinking, shit, maybe I should go back and watch those again.
Yeah, well, Perfect Blue just got re-released along with some of the other animes from that particular director, like Paprika, another one that's I highly recommend. Yeah, I've been thinking about revisiting some of these. I don't know if I've actually seen Paprika, but, you know, and then you think of, oh, probably the saddest anime I've ever seen, Grave of the Fireflies.
I've not seen that.
Oh, that is gut-wrenching. I don't know if we've ever talked about Once Were Warriors on this show, but it's up in that level, and seeing Sam's face, I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Well, the reason I'm is because we were talking about synchronicity at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I recommended that film to our friends Mike, and Oscar.
Okay.
Just this week.
I remember there was like three men in a living room watching.
This as a screener, Jay. Yeah, we were in a theater.
Were we in a theater?
We were in a theater.
Oh, we were in a theater. And it was, yeah, but it was like three guys. It was all three of us. We were all guys blubbering.
And all of us were like,
all of us having dust issues from the air conditioning.
And our jaws were sore because we were clenching our teeth trying not to cry.
I was chewing gum really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's an astounding film. If you haven't seen it, see it. It's still...
Yeah. And that's... Grave of the Fireflies is, in my mind, has that kind of emotion. Yeah. And if anybody says animation can't bring out that kind of emotion, watch that movie.
Yeah. And so we're making lots of recommendations this week, which is fine.
Yeah, it's sparking some nostalgia in us.
Yeah. But yes, so an unintentional shout out to Mike, and Oscar. but yeah, it is the synchronicity we had to.
Hi, Mike. Screw Oscar.
And they have provided us some content for last year's All the Horror, actually.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Good friends of the show.
Yes, very good friends of the show.
Mm-hmm. So go support our friends Mike, and Oscar. But you can also support us, of course. You can do that by recommending the show and giving us a 5-star rating and a short review over on iTunes or your favorite podcast app that you're listening to us on, such as Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Radio Public, Blueberry, and even
frickin' YouTube.
Yeah, even frickin' YouTube. Yeah, and of course you can follow us on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. And please send us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments, and of course fan challenges. We're up for a good fan challenge. And send us some questions too. We are on our march to episode 200 now, and we'd like to include some of your questions on that show. So send us some questions and we will answer them on the show.
Yes, we will. Maybe
we'll give you a answer.
Yes, it may not be honest.
It could be
a direct answer. It could be something that has no relevance whatsoever to the question you asked.
Well, what did you think about this scene in The Running Man, Blue?
Peanuts.
Could be that abstract. Or it could be hidden code. I don't know.
Nor do I.
It could just be brain trauma from all the remakes endured.
We have endured some. We've endured some stinkers. We've endured some great ones.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're not enduring them, though. We've enjoyed some great ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's ones like this where we're like, It was good, but not great.
Yeah. Yeah, good, but not great. I'm glad we tackled it. We know you guys like when we do these animation to live action comparisons. So please let us know whatever animated film you'd like us to tackle next, whether it's an anime from Japan or a Disney.
Or if you can find something even from somewhere else that we don't know about, mm-hmm. that would be freaking cool.
That would be very cool. We're always up for that. So let us know.
Yeah, just make sure that if you do recommend it, it is readily available through legitimate sources.
Streaming sources or available, hopefully not for a fortune on Blu-ray or DVD, for rent on iTunes or the PlayStation Store or something like that.
I mean, that's a good example. Like we've never done True Lies and we probably never will because we cannot find the original version.
Yes. We've been wanting to get you guys True Lies, the Schwarzenegger movie, which is a remake of a French film. And we just cannot get our hands on the French film with English subtitles. So if you can find that for us, please let us know. We would love to get you that episode. But right now, it's been our white whale.
Yes.
It's our Moby Dick right now. We just can't seem to catch this guy.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, please let us know. And certainly anything that you want us to do, same thing. Let us know where we can find it. Legitimately.
Yeah, occasionally it's come up. There's been things like even Trish wanted to do, and like, all right, well, there's the English version, but can't find that French one or whatever.
Or the German or the Danish. And that is the biggest challenge with some of these.
Maybe, we'd like to do more foreign film, but sometimes it's just inaccessible.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate, but it's a fact.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, because we like our foreign films.
We certainly do. Yeah.
A lot.
And we'd like to do more of it if we could. All right. Well, that was Ghost in the Shell.
Yes. And I am not in the Matrix. I have determined that now.
Okay. Well, there's...
I feel, therefore I am.
My original ghost is in its original shell. I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
And we are out of here.
Caused the puppet master to dive into a cyborg, then meanwhile murdered his real body?
Yes, that sums it up. He's originally from America, so the U.S. cooperated with us in capturing him. That's why we'd like to take him back ourselves. You have no objections to this, I hope.
Just another unidentified corpse.
Hey!
You will not find a corpse, because I have never possessed a body.
Why are his sensors on? What the hell is this?
All external controls are turned off. The body's using its own power source.
I entered this body because I was unable to overcome Section 6's reactive barriers. However, what you are now witnessing is an act of my own free will. As a sentient life form, I hereby demand political asylum.
Is this a joke?
Ridiculous! It's programmed for self-preservation!
It can also be argued that DNA is nothing more than a program designed to preserve itself. Life has become more complex in the overwhelming sea of information. And life, when organized into species, relies upon genes to be its memory system. So man is an individual only because of his intangible memory. And memory cannot be defined, but it defines mankind. The advent of computers and the subsequent accumulation of incalculable data has given rise to a new system of memory and thought parallel to your own. Humanity has underestimated the consequences of computerization.
Nonsense! This babble offers no proof at all that you're a living, thinking life form.
And can you offer me proof of your existence? How can you, when neither modern science nor philosophy can explain what life is?
Who the hell is this?
Even if you do have a ghost, we don't offer freedom to criminals. It's the wrong place and time to defect.
Time has been on my side, but by acquiring a body, I am now subject to the possibility of dying. Fortunately, there is no death sentence in this country.
What is it? Artificial intelligence?
Incorrect. I am not an AI. My codename is Project 2501.
I am a living, thinking entity who was created in the sea of information.